Good afternoon, brethren. Welcome once again to another Bible study. I trust that all is well with you and that things are progressing well in your life. As you can see by the title of this particular message, I'm going to be discussing a subject that I suppose among believers of our tradition is perhaps somewhat controversial. With all the hype regarding global conspiracies of every kind, I somewhat hesitate to delve into this subject, I guess really for fear that the information I seek to convey will automatically and perhaps even unthinkingly be lumped together with every kind of off-the-wall notion that permeates the fabric of modern society. I certainly hope that isn't the case. Still, I strongly believe that there are very intriguing and very important facts which true believers ought to at least be aware of, even if they don't wish to study more deeply into things of world history or governmental control or the mind and the plan of Satan and how he is to bring this world literally to the brink of destruction. I happen personally to feel that these things are quite significant, but I realize that some of what I hope to share with you may not appeal to everyone who hears it. All I can ask is that you give the material serious consideration and come to your own conclusions. So consider what I am giving to you as simply sharing information, and take it for what it's worth and see where it leads you in your study and your thinking. The subject matter that we are about to cover, I think, is extraordinary, and I think will also, for some, be perhaps hard to accept. Therefore, if anything, I'm going to understate the facts involved in hopes that everyone will be able to grasp both the premise and the details concerning this message. Now, for some of you who hear this tape, the information may not be new. Hopefully, however, this can serve as a reminder or a refresher for those who are already aware of what I'm about to say or cover here. And although the material that follows will at times seem incredible, we really should not, and I don't think we indeed cannot, I mean, we cannot afford to be surprised by any possible ploy or tactic utilized by Satan the devil in his wicked desire to bring the children of God to destruction. Those who adamantly refuse to accept the idea that there could possibly be a conspiracy afoot on a global scale are, in my opinion, knowingly or unwittingly ignorant of not only how the mind of the enemy works, but also even of the very word of God itself. The book of Revelation clearly describes an end-time political, financial, military, religious system known as Babylon. She will become the greatest power the world has ever witnessed. All the earth will be in awe of her. She will be the strongest, richest, most influential power ever in Earth's history. And we all know that this is precisely what God's Word reveals to us. The obvious question, therefore, is just how do we figure that such a situation will literally develop on the world scene apart from a conspiracy? And I would say a conspiracy at the highest echelons of power at that. Both the scriptures, and I mean both the scriptures and secular history, and pure common sense ought to tell us that there has been, still is, and will continue to be a satanic conspiracy among the power elite of this world who have given themselves over or been given over by God to a reprobate mind, who are servants of the devil. The bottom line in such a conspiracy is the power involved. Power to rule over people. Power to control all natural resources. power to make money, power to keep money, power to destroy, if necessary, anyone or anything in the way. The facts of this case are utterly indisputable. There is, in fact, such a volume of vital and valid evidence that you could easily win a verdict in a court of law, if indeed the legal system was operating legitimately itself. World domination is the clear objective of the power elite of this world. It has been the dream of certain men since the Garden of Eden. At the center of all such evil conspiracy is the one great power necessary to design it and to achieve such a lofty goal as complete world rule, and that is Satan the devil. Make no mistake about it, he is the originator of such a plan and the one who is determined to carry it out. He has tried time and time and time again to manipulate certain people through the eons of human history into key situations and positions where his diabolical objective could be accomplished, or where some of the groundwork could be laid. God himself, you are already aware, has had to directly intervene in the affairs of man to stop the onslaught and eventual success of this endeavor of Satan. Probably the most renowned of all such divine interventions was the great flood during the time of the patriarch Noah. The scriptures say in Genesis, the 6th chapter, and there are a number of verses that could be read here that are very important, but I'm just going to start with verse 5 and just read 2 or 3 verses here. In Genesis 6, verse 5, the scriptures state, "And God saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and that every imagination of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. And the Lord said," I think in verse 7, "I will destroy man whom I have created from the face of the earth." We probably don't give a whole lot of thought about the pre-flood world because we really don't know a whole lot about it. But it was a very significant period of time. The evil world of the pre-flood world had derived from the original confrontation between Satan and Eve in the Garden of Eden. It then spread, particularly through the genealogy of Cain. We read in Genesis 4 that after Cain slew his brother Abel, that God placed a mark of distinction and apparent protection upon him. The Hebrew word for mark in this instance is the word AVTH, and in the ancient Hebrew word pictures means literally blood of the cross. The following passage from the book of Isaiah contains the identical word and meaning. In Isaiah 46, verse 6, we read, "Thus says the Lord," or Yahweh, "the King of Israel and his Redeemer, the Lord of hosts, I am the first and I am the last, and beside me there is no God." This phrase, first and last, which as we know is directly applicable to the Messiah, is expressed in Hebrew by the letters Aleph, A-V-T, or Aleph to Toth, which is the same way of our saying A to Z, or in the Greek, Alpha and Omega. I think this interesting connection with the Hebrew word pictures with respect to this word mark is very interesting, maybe quite remarkable, but probably outside the scope of what we're talking about right now, but just thought I would mention that, found it interesting. Once this event had transpired, we're told that Cain was driven from the presence of God east of Eden into the land of Nod. Now, once there, Cain had a son. And interestingly enough, the first endeavor that the Bible tells us that he undertook was to build a city in honor of his progeny. This was the first city ever built by human beings. It was the first attempt to gather together as many people as possible into one area where they could be controlled and where they could be watched, monitored, and where things could be ordered and structured in order for there to be the kind of order that was necessary for productivity, then there had to be a structured situation put in place. A government had to be established. This is the first hint or record of that in history. The first century writers, Flavius Josephus and Philo Judaeus, both describe how Cain was the first to gather people into cities or city-states, always under his control or those who represented him. He was the first to organize standing armies, and his offspring were the originators of metallurgy, the art or science of separating metals from their ores and preparing them for use by smelting and refining. They were also highly skillful in metalwork as well, especially in the design and making of weapons of war. The scriptural connects the gross evil of the pre-flood world with fallen angelic beings. Now, we are, I'm sure, aware to one degree or another that that's true. We read in 1 Peter, the third chapter, beginning with verse 18, 1 Peter 3:18, "For Christ also has once suffered for sins, the just for the unjust, that he might bring us to God, being put to death in the flesh, but quickened by the Spirit, by which," that is to say, by the Spirit, "by which he also went and preached unto the spirits in prison, which sometime were disobedient when once the long-suffering of God waited in the days of Noah, while the ark was being prepared, wherein few," that is, eight souls, "were saved by water." Now, there has long been speculation that the so-called sons of God that are mentioned in Genesis, the sixth chapter, verse 2, were actually, in fact, fallen angels. Granted, there are many who do not accept such a position, and I can understand their reasoning. Again, this is a little bit outside the scope of the message, but we ought to take time to at least glance at this for a moment. Beginning in Genesis 6, just in the first verse, and reading just the first couple of verses, it says, and notice how it reads, "And it came to pass when men began to multiply on the face of the earth, and daughters were born to them, that the sons of God saw the daughters of men, that they were fair, and they took them wives of all that they chose." Now, if this passage is read carefully, it would seem that an emphatic distinction is made between men in verse 1 and the sons of God in verse 2. Now, if one holds to the interpretation that the phrase sons of God is only a reference to the line of Seth, which is a theory employed by many, I understand that, then there are certain problems that arise. Granted, we all know that the scriptures give evidence that both man and angels have at one time or another, or are at one time or another, called sons of God. So this information in and of itself is an insufficient basis from which to draw absolute conclusions. Connecting the Genesis 6 passage with that of the 1 Peter 3 passage that we just read, however, does establish a link and a relationship that probably ought to be more fully explored. Even the scriptural record in Genesis, the sixth chapter, goes on to say in verse 4, "There were giants," or Nephilim in the Hebrew, "in the earth in those days, and also after that, when the sons of God came in unto the daughters of men, and they bare children to them, the same became mighty men which were of old, men of renown. And God saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and that every imagination of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually." The Bible makes a definitive connection between the sons of God taking to themselves wives of the daughters of men and the result of such unions producing giants upon the earth. The Hebrew term is Nephilim. I don't really have time to get into the detailed possibilities that this subject entails or implies. If anyone is interested in pursuing that particular topic further, you can. If you don't already have a tape that we have available that's several years old entitled Satan's Insidious Plot, you might want to order that or ask for that, because it goes into that subject far more in depth. But whatever the correct interpretation of Genesis verses 1 and 2 and or 1 through 4 really are, I think it goes without challenge that the pre-flood world was filled with virtually unimaginable evil, and that fallen angels or demonic powers were directly involved with such evil. And when one considers the fact that Satan has long had one great desire, and that is to become God and rule over all things, it shouldn't be surprising at all to learn that his plan and his plot among human beings as potential children of God is simply to bring them into subjection. How is that being accomplished? By many means, no doubt, but certainly the ultimate of those avenues leads directly to world domination on a political, social, educational, financial, military, and religious scale. It is a certainty that Satan was making a concerted attempt to gather the whole world to himself, and that the demonic interaction with human beings on the earth, whatever the nature of that activity truly might have been, was serious enough for God to bring the destructive flood during the days of Noah. It would, in fact, not be surprising at all to learn someday that the pre-flood world, especially the latter part of it, was indeed dominated by fallen angels, and that they had succeeded in utilizing every tool at their disposal to deceive and ensnare and control the entire population of the earth. It is very likely that among human beings the line of Cain figured most prominently in the web of deception and evil that was woven by Satan and his cohorts. Although this is a personal opinion, but I have wondered many times if the genealogy of Cain listed in Genesis 4 did not comprise ultimately some sort of what we might call an antediluvian or pre-flood pantheon. In other words, those particular characters mentioned in Cain's lineage so yielded themselves to the direct influence and empowerment of demons that they became legendary in their own time, and perhaps became the basis for the many gods and goddesses of the various post-flood religious systems. You know, it is of more than passing interest that there are precisely 12 names given in the line of Cain, especially when combined with the fact that most of the later pantheons contain 12 great deities. I rather doubt that this is simply a mere coincidence. We may not be in possession of enough hard facts to be exact in our knowledge or complete in our understanding with respect to the pre-flood world, but I would say suffice it to say that the desire on the part of Satan to take over this world by working through certain selected individuals and groups is almost certain to have been extant during that ancient primordial time period, and probably was instrumental in leading to the destruction of man by the flood. It ought to be clear to us that God, while he is patient and will permit many evil events to be perpetrated by his enemies, does indeed draw a line at certain times. It is evident that he has dramatically intervened to literally change the course of human history on a number of very signal occasions. The great deluge may have been the first of such divine interference in the affairs of men, the objective being to limit the extent to which both demons and humans could progress in their evil schemes. A second very obvious example of this transpired within a relatively short time after the flood. And I know it's a story, probably one that we're almost too familiar with, but there was a descendant of Ham, who was one of the sons of Noah, named Nimrod. The scriptures state that he became a mighty man upon the earth. Actually, specifically, it says in Genesis 10, verse 8, and Cush begat Nimrod. Now, Cush was one of the sons of Ham, and Ham was a son of Noah. So Nimrod would be, what, a great-grandson of Noah? A great-grandson of Noah. Okay, Cush begat Nimrod. He, that is Nimrod, began to be a mighty one in the earth. He was a mighty hunter before the Lord. Wherefore it is said, even as Nimrod the mighty hunter before the Lord in the beginning of his kingdom was Babel or Babel, and Erech, and Akkad, and Calneh in the land of Shinar, and out of that land he went forth also into Assyria, and built Nineveh, and the city Rehoboth, and Calah, and Resen, between Nineveh and Calah the same, is a great city. And it's a very interesting thing to note, the striking parallel between Cain and Nimrod. Both became the mightiest men on the earth in their respective day and time. Both were worshipped, both were evil, and both were used by Satan as his chief instrument of wickedness. Both were city builders. The empires of both men were located in virtually the same area of the world as well, and both men started something that caused God to dramatically intervene and alter human history. In the case of Nimrod, we all know that under his leadership, the people determined to build a certain tower in the city of Babel or Babylon. The Bible states in Genesis 11, verse 4, and they said, let us go up and build us a city and a tower, whose top may reach into heaven, and let us make us a name, lest we be scattered abroad upon the face of the whole earth. This is a very telling passage of Scripture. Notice carefully that these people were not just building a city or a tower. There were already cities and towers at that time and later. Well, there was more, almost surely, than meets the eye in this situation. A clue is given to us in the statement that says, let us make us a name. This indicates a state of heart that was evil to the core. These people, so cleverly duped and controlled by Satan through his agent on the earth, Nimrod, were imbued with delusions of grandeur. They were infected with the same spiritual disease that Lucifer had when he presumed to think that he was greater than the Almighty himself. And listen carefully. Just how God responded to this situation. Verse 5 of Genesis 11. And the Lord came down to see the city and the tower, which the children of men built. And the Lord said, behold, the people are one. And they all have one language. And this they begin to do. And now nothing will be restrained from them which they have imagined to do. God's reply really says it all. It tells us precisely how he viewed the circumstances and the real danger that was involved in this incident. And just what was that danger? That the people were one. That is exactly what Nimrod and his followers were seeking to accomplish, uniting all peoples on the earth under his rulership, actually under Satan's, of course. And God adamantly refused to permit this to happen. Why? Because to have allowed this sinister plan to continue on to fruition would have destroyed his own purposes for creating man in the first place. Something had to be done. The people had come under the sway of the devil to such an extent that God simply had to powerfully put a stop to their activity lest they forced him to literally destroy them all. Of course, we all know what happened. God confounded their language so that they could not communicate one with another, and scattered them upon the face of the earth. In other words, he personally and purposely wrecked the first post-flood attempt at a one-world government. And ever since that signal episode at the infamous Tower of Babel, Satan has been working through centuries and even millennia of time, and with specific individuals and groups in each generation of humankind, aimed at achieving his ultimate goal of wresting control of the creation from the hands of God the Father and his Son. At times, he has had some striking successes, but never enough to actually accomplish his goal. God has continued to intervene in the affairs of men just to the degree necessary to keep Satan at bay and, of course, work out his own plans at the same time. That the desire and push for global domination has been and continues to be ongoing is without question or doubt. Satan needs to work with, in, and through human beings. Since his goal is total control of the world, the gathering together of all peoples, the amalgamation of all politics and diplomacy and science and technology and finance and military and religion and education, he has presented himself as an angel of light to key people throughout history, recruiting them to work for him, convincing them that he is the true God and that what they are doing will be for the ultimate good of mankind. He has seen to it that these people and groups were successful in this world's goods. Money and power has flowed to these key individuals, families, bloodlines, and subsequent secret societies and groups deceived and used by Satan in the prosecution of this diabolical plan. Although anciently there have been underground movements that could easily be considered a part of the devil's program, it is really during the last 350 to 400 years that things have really begun to pick up steam. And this has been especially so over the last 150 years. Indeed, as the world has moved closer and closer to the time period in which we live today, the efforts by Satan and his cohorts to achieve his purposes have greatly intensified. It doesn't take a degree in rocket science to discern the way that the devil is working. I mean, after all, we have nearly 6,000 years of human history in which to view his handiwork. But few people have the interest or take the time to really understand their enemy and how he's working. I think I've mentioned this before, but there's an old Italian saying. It's keep your friends close, but your enemies closer. And I would submit to you that there is a lot of truth and wisdom in those words for you and for me. We are admonished by the Apostle Paul to make ourselves acutely aware of our enemy and his subtle devices. We are commanded to withstand the devil face to face, and this cannot and will not ever be done by a people who are self-satisfied, laid back, comfortable, and secure, confidently assuming that everything is okay. While the roots of global domination undoubtedly go back to the very Garden of Eden and Satan's original encounter with man and the subsequent pre-flood world of Cain and his descendants, it is from Nimrod in the antediluvian world that the satanic mystery system is derived. The origins of what later came to be known as the Illuminati go back to Mesopotamia and to the Aryans. Those fierce people who conquered the Indus Valley and who created the Brahmins and the Mitanni and the Hittites and the Hurrians and the Assyrians and the Babylonians and the Persians. According to author Fritz Springmeier in his book Bloodlines of the Illuminati, the Aryans gained a military superiority over other peoples by developing breeds of war horses and horse-drawn chariots with spoked wheels. The ancient Aryans taught a theology of power. They espoused a religion that justified their enslavement of others and their blood sacrifice of lesser humans. The Illuminati creeds were developed centuries and centuries ago by power-hungry men who were enticed to believe that they were destined to rule over the rest of humanity. The Illuminati, and that name doesn't have to sound weird to us, the Illuminati are elite bloodlines that are married to the practices of black magic and Satanism to gain power. As a male or a female within these bloodlines, as they go through in their religious training, they learn all kinds of theologies, myths, gods. One common thread, however, that always permeates this training is the desire for power. They are literally bred and educated for power. They have a very egocentric, prideful theology that dehumanizes its believer. The secret societies of the Illuminati practice occult theocracies that are totally removed from the teachings and the examples of our Savior, Jesus Christ, Yeshua, the Messiah, even though the leaders of many professing Christian groups operate within the Illuminati's sphere of influence. Because they have money, power, and what they believe is both history and God on their side, they create conflicts which squeeze and pressure those who are not of their bloodlines. Over the thousands of years, the leadership of these secret, power-hungry political religious sects or societies have held to a secret monotheism, even when they allowed polytheism to flourish among the common people. They have always worshipped a god of power and evil. In fact, they are worshippers and followers of the one great evil genius who has the ability to masquerade as an angel of light, who is capable of conducting the ultimate Machiavellian deception. The ability to produce pure evil while appearing as a beautiful angel. And this principle has always been and continues to be the modus operandi of the power elite in this world, establishing governments, establishing social policies, making laws, issuing decrees, conquering nations, enslaving peoples, robbing peoples, and committing murder, and making it all seem as though it were for the good of the people involved. The ancient mysteries, secret societies taught their adherents what we call Gnosticism, which has as one of its major tenets the principle that one's good deeds must balance one's bad deeds. It's based on what is commonly known in the Orient as the yin-yang concept. When these people are evil, they are what can be best termed as Satanist or evil incorporated or personified. But when they are good, they are hailed as heroes and saviors and benefactors. The Prince of Darkness and his followers have developed an intricate plan of attack against mankind. Many people, including believers, do not recognize that Satan actually has real plans, detailed plans, ingenious plans, and that they are designed for the long haul. He will willingly suffer setback after setback through the ages of history because his plans continue on, and he finds ways of perpetuating what he wants, what he needs to achieve those plans, and builds on that from generation unto generation. The Apostle John was so right when he said in 1 John 5:19, the whole world lies in the control of the evil one. More often than not, Christians and non-Christians alike are basically unaware of how Satan operates, and especially how he controls his world. Some believe that he controls only through influencing the thoughts of people, but they are totally ignorant in many cases that Satan actively works on the physical level and has organized his empire, extremely well because of the lack of understanding of how the devil has organized his realm and how he transmits orders. Most people have been totally susceptible to all kinds of deceptions and misconceptions. Remember that Christ warned us that Satan's empire or kingdom is not divided. He says that a house divided against itself cannot stand. Satan is systematically destroying or seeking to destroy the earth through his wicked empire. It is vitally important for God's people to understand how this realm works and what it intends to do to them. Paul admonishes us by saying in Ephesians, the 5th chapter, beginning in verse 11, Ephesians 5, verse 11, "Have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, but rather reprove them. For it is a shame even to speak of those things which are of them in secret. Wherefore he says, Awake, you that sleep, and arise from the dead, and Christ will give you light. See then that you walk circumspectly, not as fools, but as wise, redeeming the time, because the days are evil. Wherefore be you not unwise, but understanding what the will of the Lord is." To the church of God at Corinth, Paul wrote, "I fear lest by any means, as the serpent beguiled Eve through his subtlety, so your mind should be corrupted from the simplicity that is in the Messiah." That was 2 Corinthians 11, verse 3. Notice in this last passage that I just quoted that Paul describes Satan's desire as to beguile Eve. The word beguile means to seduce completely. He states that the devil accomplished this goal through his subtlety. What is subtlety? It means adroitness, but in a bad sense. Cunning, craftiness, trickery, or sophistry. Sophistry means unsound or misleading, yet very clever arguments or lines of reasoning. You can absolutely tell that very nature of Satan when you go back and read Genesis, the 2nd and 3rd chapters there, where it discusses his encounter with Eve in the garden. It's a proven fact of history that elite evil groups of men organized themselves to protect and to perpetuate their powerful bloodlines, as well as to shield their nefarious activities. This organization has been called often simply the Brotherhood. In some cases, it has been termed the Brotherhood of the Snake. The goal of the Brotherhood was and still is to unite the world by any means possible and bring it under complete satanic rule. The Brotherhood has been at work throughout history in its devotion to accomplishing this objective. An understanding of how Satanism works will help clarify how important bloodlines are. Occult, which will use as a term meaning satanic or demonic power, is transmitted from one generation to another. The leading Satanists believe and teach that unless you have generations of occult or demonic power behind you, you do not qualify for the higher positions within the order and the structure of things. Genealogies are therefore of the utmost importance. The Brotherhood became dominant in many ancient societies, such as Egypt, Assyria, Babylon, Persia, Greece, and Rome. From these societies, occult religions were encouraged and cultivated and controlled by the Brotherhood, by these bloodlines that had gained such power, prominence, and wealth and influence. In time, a web of evil control had been spun around the world. One of the methods by which Satan has entrapped those he uses in his plan is by and through the human intellect. First, a chosen man's natural conscience is destroyed by intellectual systems of thought. Often these are devised by Illuminati think tanks and promulgated by Illuminati-controlled schools, seminaries, colleges and universities, educational systems that are implemented in countries that totally change the value systems in the people and in the children of those countries, including the United States of America. Now, then the imagination of the initiate, shall we say, is elevated. Remember that God intervened at the Tower of Babel or Babel because he knew that whatever the people imagined, they would be able to accomplish. The ones who are a part of the structure of Satan's empire upon this earth are told by the higher powers that they can gain true enlightenment and divinity, but only by coming under the sway of those above them. The Brotherhood was and still is an esoteric or secret order and religion whose teachings are arranged in a step-by-step process. After a student completes one level of instruction, he takes an oath of secrecy and silence to graduate to the next level. The highest levels of the Brotherhood are purely satanic. The mystery schools of Egypt and Babylon are classic examples of the Brotherhood order, as is Freemasonry, especially at its highest 33rd degree echelon. The leadership of the mystery schools has learned how to control the common people. They utilize the Babylonian system created by Nimrod, which marries the power of the state to the power of religion. This locks the average person into control. Then the Brotherhood, or later the Illuminati, use the concept of divide and conquer to further ensure their control over the masses. Many differing, competing religions, denominations, and sects are created. Numerous forms of political and governmental systems are established, and social systems, thus fostering continual friction and conflict among all peoples. The Brotherhood knows full well that knowledge is power, and it is they who claim to have the keys to secret hidden knowledge. Others must come to them to be enlightened, to acquire this knowledge, which is then given to new members in increments or stages. From the book that I mentioned earlier by Fritz Springmeier, I want to give you a little quote here. He says, "With so much secrecy surrounding the Brotherhood, it was hard for anyone to recognize its influence, and if someone did and tried to do something about it, they were blackmailed or killed. Satan does not hesitate to kill anyone who gets in his way. Step by step, the Brotherhood became entrenched in our ancient societies, and many Brotherhood members had developed satanic bloodlines. The members also took control of the world's monetary system because the devil knows that the love of money is a root of all evil. He knows that he can ensnare good people with the earth's temporal wealth." I think that's a pretty profound statement and is indeed representative precisely of how Satan works and how this world actually does work at its highest levels. So we have wealth, intelligence, knowledge, wisdom, love, divinity, imagination, God. The very things that all human beings go in search of, being used by those in power to entrap and enslave humanity, even as the poor, hapless victims are actually being deceived into believing that their captors are their benefactors. It is surely the ultimate in diabolical schemes attributable only to Satan himself. This message and these, well, maybe not so much this message, but certainly the remaining messages, or a subsequent message at least, is really planned to cover primarily the activity of the Brotherhood or the Illuminati in Britain and America. We can't assume that the powerful families in those nations alone comprise the modern-day Illuminati. There are members in many other countries as well. One of the ways the various families keep control of their own bloodlines, and hence their own future and fortune is through marriage, sometimes even complicated marriage, sometimes even incestuous marriage. I quote again from Fritz Springmeier, "These powerful oligarchical families are widespread. People with who are familiar with Slavic countries will recognize the Russian Stroganov family and the Hungarian Esterházys and Radziwills. You'll remember that Princess Radziwill is Jacqueline Kennedy's sister. Jacqueline Kennedy, of course, the wife of John F. Kennedy, the slain ex-president of the United States of America. The wife of Boris Yeltsin is the daughter of Joseph Stalin, from Stalin's marriage to Rosa Kaganovich, who was also a Jew. Rosa's father was in the Illuminati. Boris Yeltsin, you may have never heard this before, but Boris Yeltsin and Rosa are secretly Jewish. Yeltsin's original name was Baruch Elia, E-L-L-I-A. It is interesting that the first communist leader of the USSR, Nikolai Lenin, was married to a Jewish woman. Molotov, another one of the leaders, was married to a Jewish woman. Stalin's wife, Rosa, was a Jewish woman, and she had a brother, Lazar Kaganovich, who was a powerful member of the Soviet Politburo, and his son married Stalin's daughter, Svetlana. I mean, the intermarriage and relationship between these royal and powerful bloodlines is sometimes so complicated that it is virtually impossible to trace them all. It is an absolute fact that at one point, the czars in Moscow in Russia were related by blood to the ruling house in England in the British Empire. I don't have time to go into the history of that, but that is certainly an absolute fact. A number of the prominent families in the Corsican and Sicilian mafia have been associated with certain factions of the Brotherhood through the years. Now, by no means does this indicate that the mafia is indoctrinated into the order, no. But that it is structured along the same lines and patterns and is used or has been used by the Brotherhood, or if we want to use the word Illuminati, especially in such areas as drug smuggling and selling. The mafia really provides an example of powerfully aligned crime families who, though not a direct part of the Brotherhood and not initiated necessarily into the actual worship of Satan, still are associated in business with the power elite. The mafia families and their struggles and their feuds and their rivalries along bloodlines is typical of the survival of the fittest, which is the principle that dominates the Illuminati families as well. The strong and the ruthless make it. What I want to do in this particular message, if it's possible, is to begin a study on the people and events which Satan has utilized or brought to pass over the last couple of hundred years or so in his attempt to take over this world. Up until the present moment, God simply has not permitted the adversary to successfully accomplish his goal. The Bible confirms, however, that that will not always be the case. A time is predicted that when for a short season Satan will be allowed to fulfill his wishes, and the objective which he has desired for so long will be temporarily achieved. That day is approaching, and it is not by accident that we are seeing and sensing more and more of Satan's hand in the affairs of this world. Not only do I want to cover the last couple of hundred years, but specifically the part that certain Europeans and Americans have played during this crucial period. When seeking to find the truth with respect to what is really happening behind the scenes, no matter what the level, you'll almost always discover that things are not as they seem. The secret schemes of men in their lust for power and greed is fathered and fueled by the demonic world. Since the players, despite their wealth, rank, and ability to control others, are in reality merely puppets on a string in the hands of Satan. Those of us who are blessed to live in Western Europe or America, as well as the various possessions of these nations, give precious little thought and consideration to what is going on right under our own noses in our own countries. It seems that the good life has blinded us and caused us to live lives based firmly on mere assumptions. We mostly just want to be left alone to pursue our own happiness because we are so typically complacent, so easily distracted, so rarely focused, have so much in terms of leisure time and money and commodities and luxuries, it has been easy for those with evil plans to work their wickedness in the free and open society that we all prize so highly and profit from so greatly in this world. They have been able to successfully hide their real motives, work secretly to weave their own plans into the fabric of national life, exert influence and undue pressure upon elected government officials from the president or prime minister on down. They have, in fact, accomplished the almost unbelievable. I'm talking about controlling the government, the social order, the educational system, the religion, the military, the economic factors and flow of currency, the entertainment and the business life of the nations of this world. It is an incredible story that reads stranger than fiction, and I suppose it stands in a perverse manner of speaking as a monument to the perfect wickedness of the devil and his henchmen. The satanic goal of one world is as old, I say again, as the Garden of Eden. It can be traced through the millennia of time. This is especially true from the era of the Holy Roman Empire on, and becomes more and more pronounced and intense as we come forward in history to our current world situation. It is outside the scope of this message, but even so, I will say that delving into the distant past on this subject is extremely interesting and informative. Some few of you may already have done such a study. Maybe others will decide to pursue the story more deeply. So I won't take the time right now to go into the maze of secret societies, the European underground, the development of royal bloodlines, the involvement of Freemasonry, and things of this nature. All of them are important keys to understanding the whole picture. But I do want to narrow the focus a little bit, at least. The first national bank ever established was the Bank of England. It was founded in 1694 by William Paterson. An institution of this nature is more customarily known today as a central bank, and it is usually vested with extraordinary power over the monetary management of the country in which it is built or established. The concept of central banks, begun in England over 300 years ago, set the pattern and the stage for the creation of numerous such private financial establishments throughout Europe and later in America as well. The reason I mention central banks is that they play such an integral and significant part in the plan of those who would subjugate the world under their rulership. A central bank is usually a private organization, yet it is given the primary voice in controlling the economic conditions of a nation. So in reality, what happens is that public money, money that is extracted through a taxation system, public money is placed into private hands and all done right under the noses of the unsuspecting citizenry. Most national or central banks were formed through highly secret negotiations among the rich and powerful. They were then foisted off on a duped public as something necessary and beneficial. This is, of course, the very method that Satan has always used. Remember that the Messiah once stated that the kings of the Gentiles exercise authority over their subjects and that they are considered to be benefactors by the people? This is the cunning approach the devil uses to worm his way into the life of nations and weave his philosophy into the minds of the common people. Central banks have been responsible for some of the most disastrous events to plague this planet over the last 200 years. The monetary control they have exerted has allowed them to completely regulate the economic circumstances of the countries in which they were established. They have been guilty of financing wars throughout the world, often backing both sides, and of course reaping the benefits no matter what the outcome might turn out to be. In fact, they have no loyalties, no morality whatsoever. When a nation is facing a crisis situation, why, the central banks agree to step in and loan money to the state, money that they have actually taken from the people. But they never do it without an ulterior motive. They always insist on being given more and more control in exchange for the monetary bailouts that they accomplish. In this way, the central banks of both Europe and America have obtained enormous powers over the years, and in spite of ostensible government oversight, they have managed to easily finagle their way through the legal loopholes supposedly designed to prevent this sort of thing from happening in the first place. After the establishment of the Bank of England, and for at least, say, the next 100 years or so, powerful families in Europe, both of royal and common blood, although much of it royal, began to merge into association with each other, imbued with a jointly shared purpose of doing whatever was necessary to control more and more of the world's people, resources, and wealth. In 1776, a man by the name of Adam Weishaupt was a professor at the University of Ingolstadt in Germany, Bavaria, which now is a part of Germany. He was very well connected to the various powers that be of his day, and in May of that year was used by the powerful families of that time as a front man in the formation of what came to be known as the Illuminati, or Enlightened Ones. While there were certainly precursors to the formation of this particular group, and I've talked about some of that already, the popular usage of the word Illuminati itself is almost surely derived from the association established by Adam Weishaupt in Bavaria, Germany, in May of 1776. This secret organization consisted of the rich and powerful or their chosen representatives, and to the extent it was feasible, they determined to work toward, accomplish, and maintain control of the following goals. Number one, abolish land ownership. Number two, create a tax on private income. Number three, abolish the rights of inheritance. Number four, confiscate property of rebels. Number five, centralize credit and create national or central banks. Number six, control transportation and communication. Number seven, equal liability of all to labor. Number eight, distribution of the population. Number nine, free public education but under state control and finance. As you can see, a number of these goals have already been achieved. Some of them are currently in the process of coming to pass. In some instances, only partial success has been gained. Certainly, the institution of the income tax, the confiscation of property belonging to those who oppose the ruling powers, the centralization of credit and the creation of national or central banks, the control of public education, all of these things have already been implemented throughout most of the world, and especially are entrenched in Britain and America. Many people today have heard the term Illuminati, but what with all the conspiracy hype, just the mention of it sends some folks into a rage. The fact is, however, that this entity has provable historical background. It was real then, and it is real today. There is absolutely no doubt that it existed. No less a personality than the leader of the American Revolution and the first president of the United States, George Washington, spoke the following warning to the people of his day, and I quote, "It was not my intention to doubt that the doctrines of the Illuminati had not spread in the United States. On the contrary, no one is more fully satisfied of this fact than am I." In 1797, the internationally renowned scientist and professor of natural philosophy at the University of Edinburgh in Scotland, John Robison, published a book exposing the Illuminati. It was entitled Proofs of a Conspiracy Against All Religions and Governments of Europe Carried On in the Secret Meetings of the Freemasons, Illuminati, and Reading Societies. Now, that's a long title. Usually, we just refer to that book as the Proofs of a Conspiracy. Dr. Robinson declared this in 1797, an association has been formed for the express purpose of rooting out all the religious establishments and overturning all the existing governments of Europe. Their leaders seek to rule the world with uncontrollable power, while the rest will be employed as mere tools of the ambition of their unknown superiors. At about the same time, another book, totally independent and indeed even more revealing than Robinson's work, appeared in France. It was written by Abbé Borel and entitled Memoirs of Jacobism. Monsieur Borel wrote the following with respect to the Illuminati. It is formed for that general revolution which is to overthrow all thrones, all altars, annihilate all property, obliterate all law, and end by dissolving all known society. End of quote. John Adams, the second president of the United States, actually proclaimed a national day of fasting because he felt that the fledgling American government was in danger of being infiltrated and taken over by agents of this very same group known as the Illuminati. In a letter from Thomas Jefferson, the third president of the United States, to John Adams, Jefferson states in the letter his agreement with Adams that the international banking cartel was more powerful and more dangerous than standing armies. In 1812, the president of Harvard University, Joseph Willard, said the following with regard to this same Illuminati. There is sufficient evidence that a number of societies of the Illuminati have been established in this land. They are doubtless striving to secretly undermine all our ancient institutions, civil and sacred. These societies are clearly leagued with those of the same name or the same order in Europe. We live in an alarming period, he said. The enemies of all order are seeking our ruin. Should infidelity generally prevail, our independence would fall, of course. Our republican government would be annihilated. End of quote. Adam Weishaupt, friends, was funded entirely by the satanic bloodlines of the Illuminati. The purpose of the Illuminati was to recruit high-ranking Freemasons into the order. Freemasonry already reflected the agenda of the Brotherhood and had for centuries. But there needed to be a special circle of Illuminati representatives within the highest echelons of Freemasonry, especially at the 33rd degree level. In this way, the plans of Satan could be extended more easily and effectively. Here are Adam Weishaupt's own words with respect to the purpose of the group known as the Illuminati. Quote, the true purpose of the order is to rule the world. To achieve this, it is necessary for the order to destroy all religion, overthrow all governments, and abolish all private property. End of quote. Initiates into the order were sworn to secrecy, taking an oath that they would remain silent and secret on penalty of death. Weishaupt encouraged all the members of the Illuminati to lie and to deceive. He said, and I quote, one must speak sometimes one way and sometimes another, so that with respect to our true line of thinking, we may be impenetrable. End of quote. Another means of deception was and is the use of symbols, arcane themes and motifs that are found most often in art and literature from the Middle Ages on, and pen names. Adam Weishaupt's code name was Spartacus. Remember that, because you're going to hear that come up in another quote from one of the most famous and knowledgeable men in this century. The Illuminati has been able to successfully attract and recruit members by offering immense power, influence, wealth, and worldly success. The members are taken through the brotherhood process by initiation, step by step, level by level. Originally, there were 13 levels or degrees inside the order. They were loosely based on the 13 tribes of Israel, the tribe of Joseph being split into Ephraim and Manasseh, as you know, although the number 13 has numerous occult connections as well. A member of the highest degree was called a king, the second highest a priest, the third a prince, and so on down the line. Later, the Illuminati reorganized and adapted a six-level or six-degree system with ranks at each level. The existence of the Illuminati, although indeed generally a secret society, has not gone completely unnoticed, as the previously quoted material from the first three American presidents and others clearly indicates. In fact, I could have brought out quotes from Andrew Jackson, who was the seventh or eighth president of the United States. You see, the central bank, the Bank of the United States, had been formed before Andrew Jackson took office, and he literally dissolved the National or Central Bank of the United States. This was the bank, the central bank, that had been established shortly after the foundation or formation of the United States of America by the very same powers that had established the central banks and had gained control of the government, political, religious, and social order in Europe. So Andrew Jackson was a real fly in the ointment, a real monkey wrench in the whole thing when he canceled out and dissolved the first central bank in this country. It would be a number of years until the central bank concept was able to take root again in America. But certainly all of the early leaders of this country were profoundly aware of the Illuminati, said so in their writings, and even took decisive action, such as calling a national day of fasting or even dissolving the very central bank of the United States in activity directed against the efforts of the Illuminati. Now, in December the 24th, or on December the 24th, 1912, an edition of the Vienna Free Press contained an article written by Walther Rathenau that said, quote, 300 men, each of whom knows all the others, govern the fate of the European continent, and they elect their successors from their entourage, end of quote. Many years later, in 1980, Dr. John Coleman wrote a book entitled The Committee of 300. Some of you may have read it, in which he discussed very detailed material gathered by himself and other sources from the MI6 branch of British intelligence. In a treatise on the very same issue, author David Hill states the following, and I quote, "The guiding force behind the Illuminati has always been certain demonic spirits assigned to steer the leaders of the society," end of quote. In other words, the kingdom of Satan is structured or ordered from the top down. Under Satan are other demonic beings with varying degrees of enlightenment and power. When the book of Daniel speaks of the prince of Persia and the prince of Greece, it is with obvious reference to such evil angelic beings who have been given control over various specific human leaders and groups that are a part of the overall hierarchy and system of evil. Going back to the author Fritz Springmeier and quoting another little passage here from his book, he says, "The human command structure of the Illuminati is difficult to understand since it is concealed from the general population. The levels can be defined as interlocking organizations and societies that vary in their operation and status. A person can be involved in a high-level organization and at the same time function in lower groups as well. For example, a high school student body president holds a high position, but can also be a member of the school science club, a far less influential or important group." End of quote. Traditionally, the members at the top, those descended from the ancient privileged and empowered bloodlines, call themselves kings. Today, they are known as the Olympians. Clearly a throwback to the ancient, impregnable, unapproachable, lofty abode of the gods of Greek mythology. There are 13 major Illuminati bloodlines, but these powerful families are associated either closely or loosely with numerous other enlightened, strong, well-entrenched bloodlines, groups, and individuals in key places of power and position in the world. The 13 Illuminati bloodlines come primarily from Europe and America, and perhaps in one instance from China. The associated families can be found in Russia, the Middle East, Europe, the United States, in many, many nations. The top 13 bloodlines, through their representatives, either appointed or elected, put pressure on and control, to one degree or another, the activities of the associated families, even though those groups are themselves exceedingly wealthy and powerful in their own right. It's a structured system. The Illuminati structure could be said to be divided into three spheres of responsibility and activity and control. If we were to compare it to the American federal government, the executive branch would consist of the 13 major bloodlines. It is often referred to within the order as the Council of 13. Under their leadership is the Committee of 300, comparable to the legislative branch of the U.S. federal government. Each member of this committee not only has organizations that answer to them personally, but also the committee itself jointly operates a number of other key organizations and secret societies. Finally, if we can continue our original analogy, the judicial branch consists of 70 members, perhaps loosely based off on the Jewish Sanhedrin. Within the Illuminati, or Brotherhood, are many subcommittees and groups. Some of them are familiar to most people today, others may not be. Such entities as the Bilderbergers, founded in 1954 by one of the leading globalists of his time, Prince Bernard of the Netherlands. Then you have the Club of Rome that was originated by Dr. Angelo Pacelli, the Trilateral Commission, the Royal Institute for International Affairs, which then fostered the Council on Foreign Relations in this country, the Tavistock Institute, the Pilgrim Society, the Jason Society, the Golden Dawn, numerous secret high-level 33rd degree Masonic orders, the Bohemian Grove, the Order of the Skull and Bones, the Knights of Malta, the Scroll and Key, the Priory of Zion, the Tiffany Lamp Group, the Round Table, and so many others, far too numerous to mention in this message. Organized evil's greatest advantage, or advantages, I guess I could say, is its ability to conceal its true identity by either total secrecy or by presenting itself as the benefactor of mankind. Its genealogical connections, its wealth, and thus its power to influence, and most especially, the public's disbelief that something of this grotesque a nature could actually have been created and perpetuated even to this very day. Just as a reminder, I wish and hope you will recall how long it took for the United States government and the FBI in particular to finally realize and admit that there were organized crime families operating in all the major cities of this country and had been doing so for years to the tune of untold billions of illegally made dollars stripped from the pockets of unsuspecting American citizens. Although I hope to continue on in this subject, maybe make a separate series of tapes, I know that my tape is going to run out in just a few minutes, and I want to get just a little bit more information in real quickly before the tape expires. I want to leave you with a very amazing quotation from a very amazing individual. This is an individual that many would, I think, believe to be the man of the 20th century, Sir Winston Churchill. I told you a little earlier in the tape to keep in mind that the code name of Adam Weishaupt was Spartacus. Now, here is what Winston Churchill, the Prime Minister of England, the leader, really, the leading force in World War II with respect to stirring and strengthening and leading the Allied forces against the Germans. Winston Churchill was very familiar with the Illuminati, with their history, and their current work at that time. Notice his comments, and I quote, "From the days of Spartacus Weishaupt to those of Karl Marx and Lenin, Stalin, and Hitler, this worldwide conspiracy for the overthrow of civilization and for the reconstruction of society on the basis of arrested development, of envious malevolence, and impossible equality has been steadily growing." End of quote. Prime Minister Winston Churchill, of all things, mentions Adam Weishaupt, and does so by his code name, the man who is the front man and founder of the group that is known as the Illuminati. What did Sir Winston Churchill know that you and I take for granted or don't know? Notice that he mentions Marx and others aside from Weishaupt. He did this because he was privy to the truth about who was really behind such men as Karl Marx and Friedrich Engels, creators of the Communist Manifesto, of Nikolai Lenin, leader of the Russian Revolution, and Joseph Stalin, and Adolf Hitler, founder of the German Nazi Party, and the ostensible instigator of World War II. He, Winston Churchill, knew the secret alliance of the powerful Illuminati bloodlines, international bankers, frankly almost all of them on Wall Street in New York City, and other key personnel in powerful positions throughout the world. In fact, Churchill went on to say, on another occasion, that the world is not what it seems to be, that it is actually ruled by unseen forces that are not even viewed as part of the power structure in the world. I don't know about you, brethren, but this kind of factual information is sobering. It is not intended to frighten anyone or cause despair. On the contrary, being an informed believer, understanding the methods and devices of our avowed enemy, and perceiving how and why things are developing all around us as they are, constitute part of the powerful arsenal of weapons all awake and active believers ought to possess. Our hope is clear, and it is unquestionably that Almighty God wins this war, and Satan the devil is utterly defeated. We should be walking in victory even at this moment, though the circumstances surrounding us be shocking and chilling and bound to be worse before they mend. The Apostle Paul gives encouragement and advice by saying, "We are hard pressed on every side, yet not crushed. We are perplexed, but not in despair. Persecuted, but not forsaken, struck down, but not destroyed." That's a powerful statement, one that we must take to heart and hold closely to us in the times that will try our souls, that are rushing at us right now at breakneck speed. The Illuminati, rather than being some term, laughable term, or off-the-wall, bizarre kind of term that many people have made it, what with all the hype, the Illuminati is not something just of the past. It's not something that is just coming. It's present. And it already, quite frankly, brethren, has taken over Europe and America. We'll go into this a whole lot more. The so-called Illuminati is for real and is almost certain to be used by Satan to usher in the final phase of this present age. But we, brethren, will fear no evil, for he who is with us is greater than he who is in the world. And if God be for us, who can be against us? I hope that this study, brief as it has been, was adequate enough to lay some foundation for discussing some of the more specific events and people that have developed over the last 150 to 200 years in America and Britain, particularly in the Anglo-American establishment. Just in closing, let me recommend a couple of books as reading material. I did that on the Babylon series, and hopefully I won't repeat one of those in listing a couple of books for you to read. But certainly two books that are very informative and highly factual and written by someone with very outstanding credentials are the two books, Tragedy and Hope, by Dr. Carol Quigley of Georgetown University, and also his book, The Anglo-American Establishment. It is a powerful expose of some of the high echelon maneuvering of powerful bloodlines, families, groups, and men that have affected the course of life in Britain, parts of Europe, and in America for the last 150 years. It is powerful information. You might wish to obtain a copy of that. You can probably get it online from Amazon.com or Barnes & Noble or one of the other places that specializes in things of that nature. And there are other volumes of information that are available. None come to mind at this moment, but I know there are. And as they do come to mind, I will pass them along. And if you have information that is factual and that is not just out and out totally speculative, then I would certainly be very pleased to receive it from you if it will add to our understanding of this subject. So I leave you with that, wish you a good week, and hope to be with you next week or the next time that I am able to make a tape and share information with you. I very likely will continue to pick up on this theme at least for one more tape and possibly two, and then get back into some other subject matter after that. Thank you for listening and for allowing us to come in and share this with you. And we just appreciate your prayers and your support in every way and are just praising God that this opportunity for service exists, not only for us, but for as many as who want to be involved in something in service to God. God has given that an open door and a green light to every one of us to be a part of something that is really important, to really show forth the Messiah in our lives. So take that calling to heart, folks, and take it seriously, and let the Spirit of God come into your life and stir you and move you as never before to seek His will, to humble yourself, to yield yourself to His potter's hands, and to rise up in the power of the living Messiah within you and through you in service to our God and to all with whom any of us come in contact.